Welcome to Greek Club at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. We are reading through the Greek of Matthew's Gospel. And am I right, friends, that we are about to start chapter 5, or did we start chapter 5? I couldn't remember.
You started it in lectionary at lunch.
Okay, that's why I got confused. All right. So I think we're at 5:1. And again, I think the plan will be, we've read some narrative now, four chapters of narrative, and I thought we might just read the Sermon on the Mount, which will take us a while, and then I thought maybe move to St. Paul and do a little bit of a different feel like that.
Cool.
So let's begin, and in our usual way, maybe I'll take verses 1 and 2, which is the narrative introduction to what came quite early to be called the Sermon on the Mount. Edonde tus achlus an ebe eis ta aras, kai kathesantas autou pras eilthan autou poi mathetai autou, kai anoixas ta stama autou edidas hien autous legon. So it's kind of a formal introduction. Maybe take this initial participle from horao, edon, the aorist participle, active, masculine, singular, nominative, as temporal, when he had seen the crowds, aneve, from anabino, a very strong third principal part. He went up, Jesus, of course, from the context of the subject, literally into the mountain, but probably just on. There's a slippage in with prepositions in the New Testament, ace and an, uncharacteristically can be interchanged. You'll see this sometimes in the variant readings in the different manuscripts. So just on the mountain, and after he had sat down, a genitive absolute. Notice that it's not a genitive absolute, because if it were, the referent would occur nowhere else in the sentence. So it's one of the signs that the Greek writers of the New Testament are not, strictly speaking, always following the rules. Since you have his disciples came to him, auto, you could actually communicate what Matthew wanted to communicate by having a predicate position participle that was dative. Aorist participle, active, masculine, singular, dative. After he had sat down, his disciples came to him. So it's a little redundant, but again, it's just showing that in terms of strict syntax and precision, the authors of the New Testament are not classicists or atticists or something like that. And, verse 2, you could translate after he opened his mouth. It seems a little unnecessary since you have to open your mouth in order to teach. So maybe just bang bang or piggyback, he opened his mouth and imperfect. In Matthew's Gospel, as you know, five large speeches, a couple of small ones. This is the first. So an inceptive translation works really well. He began to teach them legon, probably a Semitic influence, saying. Da-da-da-da-da. Questions about 1 and 2. Pretty straightforward. And we all know what the next 10 verses are supposed to say, right? Shall we just intone them? We won't say them, we'll intone them. You know, blessed. Right? Okay, we'll just push ahead. Notice that the adjective makarios, here masculine plural, to a nominative as the predicate nominative of the implied linking verb. The subject is actually the poor, those who are mourning, etc., etc., but the adjective is fronted for emphasis. Of course, there's a rhythm to it, a repetition. So, the King James has taught us to translate blessed are or blessed are, but you could do the same thing by translating the initial clause, for instance, the poor with respect to spirit are blessed, underlined, or bold type, or something like that. So there's an emphasis. If you just do a little word study on makarios in Matthew, you'd see that this is not, Robert Schuller, the Be Happy Attitudes? this is not a reference to happiness, it's a reference probably to eschatological blessedness. I mean, it's a salvation word in Matthew. So it's not just happy or fortunate, it's tantamount to saved or justified or something like that. So, and again, we all know what it's supposed to say, so it shouldn't take us long. Makarioi hoi ptokoi en pneumate, hati autonis en e basilea ton uranon. Those who are poor with respect to spirit, or sometimes poor in spirit, are, underscore, blessed. Right? And then Jesus explains why. Because the reign of heaven, probably a subjective genitive, heaven's action of reigning, and heaven there as a kind of a roundabout way of referring to God, is of them. Now, right away, it's a little awkward. What does that mean? The reigning of heaven is of them. It's normally taken to express possession. But then you have to tweak it a little bit even farther, which is typically how it's done, to say what the reigning of God produces is theirs, or something like that. So, otherwise, you're left with some interesting, I think, theological questions. But that's the way it's typically rendered, and I think it works pretty well. Pretty straightforward, and we all know it. Any comments or questions? All right. Let's. Why don't we? Maybe we'll get the next three together. They follow a very strictly speaking redundant pattern. Makarioi hoi penthuntes, hati autoi parakrithesantai. Makarioi hoi praes. Hati autoi kleronamesus in tain gain. Makarioi hoi penontes kai depsontes tain dikaiosinein. Hati autoi kortasthesantai. So again, blessed are those who, present participle, go on mourning, perhaps. And why would that be the case? Why, if you're mourning now, are you currently blessed? And the answer is the future promise. Probably eschatological. They will be comforted. And not just they, but the unnecessary autoi is emphatic. They themselves will be comforted, will be parakaleoed. In verse 5, the translation of praes is actually, I think, somewhat crucial. We mentioned this last week at lectionary at lunch because this is the reading of the Gospel for All Saints Day, which is coming up soon. To translate praes as if it were a virtue, like meekness or humbleness or something like that, probably misses the mark. This is the adjective that is used more often than any other in the Septuagint to translate the anavim, the lowly ones, that is, those who are helpless and in need of Yahweh's salvation. So the first four Beatitudes aren't virtues per se. They're actually expressions of human inability and emptiness. Franzman speaks that way. Grammatically, it's very easy, of course. So we'll translate praes as lowly. The lowly ones are blessed. Again, not in the sense of a virtue, but in the sense of a need. Why? Because they themselves will inherit the earth. Not the land here, but probably the earth, given the eschatological color with which everything Jesus does is portrayed in Matthew. And then the last of the first four then, blessed are those who are hungering, present participle, and thirsting for, the accusative object, righteousness. Why? Because they themselves will be stuffed full. They will be satisfied. Righteousness here, sometimes dikaiosine in Matthew refers to human righteousness, like in 6:1. Watch lest you do your righteousness in the presence of people to be visible to them, right? But here I think you could argue that it refers to God's righteousness, that is, His saving deeds, similar to a couple of other passages in Matthew. We'll come to a couple of them when we get to chapter 6. Again, grammatically very easy. I think the accusative is just the object of the participle. Right? Why are they blessed? Because they themselves will be kortazoed. Right, another future indicative passive. It's actually a nice morphology review. You know, you get this theta, eta, sigma that you typically see on the future passive stem. The participles there, in terms of their spelling in verse 6, are both alpha contract. It's peinao and dipsao. And that's why you have the omega with the circumflex. So when the alpha of an alpha contract verb, when the stem connects with any O sound, whether it's a short or a long O, it contracts to omega. And that's why you've got an omega there. And the reason I know that is because I have to teach elementary Greek. So that, and I guess I was going to say that and a quarter will get me a cup of coffee, but I guess at Caldy's it's probably about $1.75 or something. Yeah. So taking those four together, any questions about Greek or syntax or anything? Again, it's pretty straightforward, but anything that you want to mention? Okay, good. Maybe we'll set a new personal best for verses covered. Again, very, very rich theologically, but grammatically, not very hard. Right? So verse 7. Then we'll go all the way through 10, actually. Makarioi hoi eleemanes hati autoi eleethesentai. Makarioi hoi katha roi te kardia kai autoi tantheon apsentai. Makarioi hoi eireno poioi hati autoi huioi theu kleethesentai. Makarioi hoi de diogmenoi henikin dikaiosines. Kai auton esten he basilea ton uranon. The merciful people are blessed. In the second four Beatitudes, if I could just make this one comment, now the subject seems to have in mind the transformation that begins because you are associated with Christ, because you are his disciple. So merciful, pure in heart, peacemaking and persecuted. These things result from the disciple relationship. And are true of all Christians, actually. So, but that's theology. That slows down. This is Greek club. So the merciful people are blessed. Why? Because they themselves will receive mercy. They will be mercied. Again, eschatologically. The pure with respect to heart, or the clean, the cleansed with respect to heart, are blessed. Why? Because they themselves will see God. That's probably the clearest end time reference in the Hutti clauses. You don't see God until the last day. Contrary to some of our sort of apocryphal piety that has sprung up around the interim state. But don't worry, I won't get cranked up about that. Blessed are the peacemakers are blessed. Why? Because they themselves will be called sons of God. Now that's a little interesting. You know, if you look at this, you've got the two nominatives, autoi huioi theou. Some of the grammars call this passive transformation, which is a cool thing to say. And what that does is it invites you to take the verb and make it active voice. So what would it look like if the verb said, God will call them his sons, understanding they're, of course, sons as sons and daughters, right? So God will call them, that would be accusative, and then huioi would be huius, a second accusative, right? So in the active voice, it would be what Wallace calls an object complement, double accusative. And what happens when you make it passive voice? Well, the accusative direct object becomes the subject, and it sort of drags the other accusative with it, making it also nominative. See? And so that's why you've got the double nominative there. There's nothing particularly significant about it. It's just a little awkward. Some of you are trying to describe, how did we get two nominatives here? So it's because the verb is passive voice. The sense is that God will call them his huioi. His huiuses, right? So, and then verse 10, those who have been and are persecuted, the perfect participle passive, those who have, maybe you could say it, those who have experienced persecution, or something like that. are for the sake of righteousness, again, probably God's righteousness. They are blessed. Why? Because, once again, back to the antiphon of the first beatitude, the reigning of the heavens is theirs. It belongs to them. So again, very rhythmic, patterned, easily memorized, right? I think a strong case probably could be made that we don't know always, we kind of assume that the Lord taught in Aramaic, since that's the common spoken language of Galilean peasants. So if it's been translated, you know, it's been, as opposed to these being the ipsissima verba of Jesus, which they could be, because we have every reason to believe that Christ was functionally trilingual in his state of humiliation. Isn't that awkward to talk about the Son of God as a real human being? It is for us anyway. But yes, I mean, it doesn't take long. You can look really good at Bible memorization if you just look at the Beatitudes, just because they're so, you know, so easily memorized. Any questions?
Before eleemonas.
Yes.
No, that's from the verbal root eleo, right?
Well, there is actually an adjective, eleemon.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So this actually, I think this is a substantized adjective, right? Right. Yeah, Will.
With the te cardia, is that date of reference, a date of respect?
Yeah.
What do you call that?
I think that's the way it's normally labeled, right? Pure in this regard, in this respect. Yep. Yeah, go ahead.
So the being persecuted for righteousness, the difference would be like being persecuted because we've been made right with God, or being persecuted because we did a good deed. That's the difference that you're saying?
Right. It would probably be leaning more towards the former and less to the latter. And you can see this because it parallels in verse 11 when people speak evil against you for the sake of me. So righteousness and Jesus are paralleled, right? Now, it can obviously at times mean that because you've done something good, I suppose, but it's really for the sake of God's righteous deeds, right? Right. But again, that's theology, and that'll bog us way down. We're going to set up record here today. Okay? Good. Other questions? Okay. Very good. Now, notice we shift to the second person plural, away from third person plural. The Sermon on the Mount will stay in second person, mostly plural, sometimes singular, until the very end, the conclusion, when it shifts back to third person. I think it's deliberate. You kind of come in through the third person Beatitudes, and if you say, oh yeah, that's me, then you're ready to read the rest of the sermon. And then once you've read it, then you're ready to go back out into a very dangerous world about which Jesus warns us at the end. So, but anyway, second person plural, verse 11. Makarioi este hutan ane disosen humas kai dioxosen kai eposen pan paneran kath humon maybe pseudominoi Henikin emu, chairita kai agaliasta hati hamestos humon palus en tois uranois, hutos gar et dioxan tus prophetas tus prahumon. You are blessed whenever, hata plus on, right? Whenever you have a form of on, then the verbs in that clause will be subjunctive, right? Like e'an. So whenever, and so now we have 1, 2, 3 subjunctives, all of them aorist. Whenever they revile you and pursue, in this context in a negative sense, persecute, and say every evil, kata plus the genitive can mean, among other things, against you. Now we have a participle. It's hard to make the text critical decision, so they've got it in brackets. If we read it, you could probably take it as maybe expressing manner or perhaps temporal, by lying or as they lie or something like that. And the referent of the participle, you can see from the menoi ending that it's masculine plural nominative, would be the implied subject of those three verbs, the they who are reviling and persecuting and saying, right? By lying, all of this on account of me, right? And notice the parallelism between Hennekin and Mu in verse 11 and verse 10 in the first line, Hennekin dikaiosines, right? So, what's righteousness? The answer is, altogether?
Jesus,
right. Now, two present imperatives, they could be indicatives, be the same form. Kairata, from Cairo, rejoice, y'all. And agaliao, another alpha contract verb, which explains the circumflex. Rejoice and exult. Maybe go on rejoicing, or really rejoice, and really exult. Something like that. Which is, to be honest, not the way we typically respond. We call our lawyers, right? When people do bad things to us. We sue, right? Because we're Americans. Rejoice and exult. Why? Because your wage, the wage of you is much in the heavens. Your reward is great in heavens. Why? Because, like this, they persecuted the prophets, the before you ones. Right? So you're in good company. Okay, that's 11 and 12. Questions?
Do you have any explanation for the high number of textual variations in those two verses? It seems like every two or three words.
Yeah, I know. There's a ton of them. I don't, actually, Ben. Remembering, of course, that the apparatus is a summary. I just wonder if it's because it's not quite so easy to memorize.
Well, they all look very minor.
Yeah,
yeah. Major.
Yeah, you have transpositions and a few insertions. Yeah, they're not major variants. So, yeah, Mark.
Agaliaste.
Yes.
Why is that in
that
passive form?
It's agaliaomai, I think.
Okay.
I think it's deponent. Yep. And again, it's alpha contract. So, good. Again, the Greek of Matthew is not that tough, although he'll throw you a loop every so often. So, okay, good. 11 and 12. Anything else? All right. Let's do 13, then we'll stop. Humes est ta halas tes geis eande ta halas moranthe en tine halastesitai, es uden iscue eti eme blethen exo kata patestai hepa ton anthropon. I made a mistake. There's so much interesting grammar in this verse that we have to stop here. Actually, because it's 12:24 and a half. So we will pick up at verse 13 next week. There's some really interesting stuff there. So come back for Greek Club, lectionary lunch tomorrow, Hebrew Club on Thursday.